Hello, and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff, and I'm delighted to have you with me today. Today we're going to have another conversation about nutrition and health. And I'm going to talk with a friend of mine, Gail Lugo. Gail has been following guidelines that are very similar to what Raymond Francis lays out in his book. But of course, she started doing it before his book was written. She's been following these guidelines for 14 years. And I think the particular significance that I wanted to share with you is that she has a very serious genetic illness. Those of us with genetic illnesses, and I'm sure that there are a number of you in this audience, are sometimes very put off by the kinds of conversations that we had with Raymond Francis last week. Not because there's not good stuff in it, but because of the way it's presented. And in particular, there's one comment in the interview that you heard me struggle with myself, and that is when he said that it's basically, if something happens to you, if you get sick, that it's your fault. This is not an uncommon statement amongst people who take this tack. And even Dr. Bernie Siegel sometimes makes you feel like if you're sick, it's your own fault, that you did something wrong, therefore you're sick, and you need to fix it or you'll stay sick. That could not be further from the truth sometimes. I've been trying to think of an analogy that would work that might help us get a handle on this. It's almost as though you were shipwrecked and you wind up on a small island and there are people there, but they speak a language that you don't speak. So let's say, for example, it's Greek. So they speak Greek and you don't speak Greek, and you're trying to figure out how you're going to make your way on this island. Now, you could say that if you don't speak Greek, it's your fault. You could have learned Greek in school. You could have studied more. You could have learned it, but you didn't. Okay, so in that sense, I suppose it's your fault. One could also say it's your fault that you were shipwrecked. You never should have taken that trip in the first place. It was a stupid idea. So you could just sit here on the beach and castigate yourself for A, taking the trip and getting yourself into this situation, and B, the fact that you never learned Greek. So that was a stupid idea. You would have been much better off if you'd known how to read Greek. On the other hand, neither one of those is being very productive. And it certainly is not going to help you get out of this situation. So nobody ever told you that taking an ocean trip was a bad idea. Nobody ever told you that you were supposed to learn Greek. You thought you were doing just fine. You were doing the kind of thing that other people did, and you thought you were doing well. Now all of a sudden you're in a situation where it would have been a good idea if you had learned Greek, but you didn't. So, what's your plan? At this point, the best thing to do is to get yourself up and begin using your sign language and doing the best you can and begin to learn Greek, or at least enough of it that you can get the food that you need and you can begin to make some progress toward getting out of this situation, or at least appreciating the situation. Even if you stay the rest of your life on this island, you're going to need to learn to communicate with the other people, learn to make a living or whatever, and begin to appreciate the new circumstances. It's not the circumstances you grew up with. It's not the life you expected to have. But there are some benefits. The people here are very nice. The climate's very nice. There are some advantages to being where you are. So that's the situation when you're already sick and you suddenly begin to feel that it would have been good if you'd known how to eat right from the beginning. It would have been good if you hadn't poisoned your body with these various things. But we didn't know. Nobody ever told us. We thought we were doing the right thing. All of us who grew up in the 50s, 60s, 70s have been exposed to a number of toxins, but with all the right intentions. the intentions were good, the results were bad, okay, it doesn't help to look backward, it helps only to look forward and begin to get ourselves out of this pickle. So that's my advice when you're reading one of these books. Either put it down and find another author who's more to your liking, or read it for the goodness that's in it. Listen to the stories and listen to the outcomes and think if that's the kind of path that you want for your own self. And don't listen when somebody says it's your fault. There's no blame to be had here. We're in the pickle that we're in. We're looking for a plan. We're looking for a way forward. And that's the only thing that really counts, is the path you take from here is what we need to focus on. Let me take a minute and take a little break here, and we'll be right back to talk with Gail. The Powerful Patient is brought to you as a public service by the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance. We work with people who are dealing with complex medical conditions or who may be struggling to get a diagnosis. We help you learn how to manage your health, form a partnership with your healthcare providers, and manage your healthcare team. Read about us on our website at powerfulpatient.org. We welcome your questions either by email or by telephone. 1-800-767-4845, extension 6, or questions at powerfulpatient.org. Thank you. I'd like now to introduce Gail Lugo. Gail is an active volunteer for the VHL Family Alliance. She has von Hippel-Lindau disease, which is a genetic flaw that causes tumors in multiple parts of the body. And she'll share some of that with you as we go forward. But one of the things that she does on a consistent basis is to share her story and her expertise with other people who are also managing VHL. Welcome, Gail. So glad to have you here. Gail, I thought, if you don't mind, we could start by talking about Raymond Francis's book and the interview that I did with him last week. Tell me your impressions.
I liked his talk. A lot of people that are in integrative therapies tend to be fanatics, all or nothing. Mm-hmm. I personally don't respond that way. And he is a scientist, so he looks at things differently.
Right.
And I noticed one of your concerns was the dairy and the milk products.
Yeah, I was curious about dairy because I get mixed messages about dairy.
Mm-hmm.
Some people love it, some people hate it. So tell me your impressions.
I don't drink milk. I never did, never liked it. I don't think it's good for you. Kids that tend to drink milk are kind of overweight. It's filled with antibiotics and hormones and who knows what else.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of dairy products are made from milk. So it's made from the same milk.
Right.
I don't drink milk, but I do eat cheese. But I don't eat cheese every day. And there was one time in my life I tried to go vegetarian. I did not do it correctly because you really need to plan your fruits and vegetables. And within 2 months, my hair started falling out. My legs gave out under me. And I was doing it for health reasons. Many people that do it because they don't want to kill an animal.
Right.
But I just went cold turkey on everything, and it took me a year to recover.
Wow.
And like I said, my legs were giving out under me. I was having all sorts of problems, and I decided to eat meat that night. I felt probably about 60% better the next day.
So we're designed as omnivores. We're supposed to eat a little bit of everything.
Right. And I believe in meat. I do.
And so cutting out one entire food group is probably not a great idea. But the milk products are a little bit funny. I mean, as Raymond said, adults really were not designed to drink milk. Milk is designed for baby animals. And what adults are more likely to want to eat is cheeses. And so cheeses have been used to good effect in most countries of the world, not all. In Asia, they use very little cheese. And people are still perfectly healthy because they eat everything else. So if we look at milk as one source of animal protein, then we still need some animal protein in our lives, but maybe not from milk.
Right.
And he makes a perfectly good point that there's other sources of calcium. We don't have to drink milk in order to get calcium. And there is new research that seems to show that calcium from milk is not, in fact, strengthening our bones.
Correct. It's actually doing the opposite.
Yeah. So, and I think that's one of the problems today is we get such conflicting information.
Exactly.
We get papers that say it's fabulous and papers that say it's poison.
Well, you have to look who's funding the research.
Right. And that's not always easy to find, by the way.
Right. For obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons. They'll hide it, too. So.
Right.
But I think there's an emerging body of research that really cannot be ignored, that we need to work on getting these additives out of our lives. And I have Raymond's book in front of me, and he makes a couple of very interesting points. This book offers a revolutionary way to perceive health, a guidebook for living based on cutting-edge science that is simple to understand. This guide gives you the power to control your own health in a way that perhaps you never imagined possible. And so if we take it in that vein, I mean, he's trying to help us understand how our bodies work, how we process the foods and other things that we take in. And he says that health is equal to the positive things minus the negative things. So that makes sense, right?
Okay.
And that there are six pathways. Nutrition is one of them. Toxins. Where are we getting toxins? Psychological factors are very important. Physical factors. We need exercise, and please don't fall off a cliff. And genetics. Genes affect our cells, but not nearly as much as modern medicine would have us believe, quote unquote.
I believe that, though.
Yeah, learn how to optimize your genetic potential and avoid genetic damage. Right. And the sixth is medical. Modern medicine kills and injures millions of people every year. Learn how medicine affects your cells and make educated decisions about which treatments you need and which you do not. And again, there's pluses and minuses. I mean, you can't just say the whole medical profession needs to be thrown out the window. That's not true.
That's correct.
But that Western medicine is best at fixing you when you're truly broken, you know, if you're in an accident or you cut yourself or something like
that's
that.
That's correct.
All that emergency room stuff is critically important, and they do that very, very well. And you and I both know that we have tumors and things that sometimes need to get cut out. But prevention is worth pounds and pounds of cure. And you know that better than anybody. So would you mind sharing a little bit about what you've done? Because you have a genetic risk condition that might lead you to have lots of tumors, and you have relatives who've died at a much earlier age than you are now. So tell us about how you decided to take control, even in the face of your genetic condition.
Mostly through what you just said, those six features, nutrition, toxins, psychological, physical, genetics. Well, genetics is there. I can't change my genes, but I can change what they're bathed in. And that's the environment. And that's through nutrition and toxins, as well as psychological and physical, because they're bathed in all of that.
So tell us more about that. They're bathed in all these, all the food that you eat. Whatever you eat is obviously going to affect the cells and the genes that are in them, and the toxins that you take in through your skin or your air or water.
I basically look at anything that touches any of my senses, touch, feeling, taste, and I determine what I can do and what I can't do. I can't change my shampoo. I can't change my deodorant. The air I breathe, I could make sure my filter is clean, have some air purifiers around. I actually have one in my refrigerator as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. It helps with, food doesn't spoil as easy. The refrigerator doesn't smell. It keeps it somewhat clean. And a lot of fruits and vegetables, when they rot, they leave a, I guess, an acid or some kind of molecular transition occurs, and this helps it in a way so it doesn't do this fast, and it absorbs some of this stuff that goes on in the refrigerator.
Right. Evidently, fruits and veggies give off some sort of gas as they mature and go on to get rotten.
Mm-hmm.
So that if that gas is controlled in some way, and you use this air purifier, how do you get an air purifier into your refrigerator?
It's one designed for the refrigerator.
Huh. I didn't know there was such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Very clever.
So you can't change your genes, but you can change what they are bathed in, what they're surrounded by, the environment, the air, the water, and, of course, the nutrition that they get, the food that you eat. Let's take a little break here, and we'll be back in just a moment to talk some more with Gail.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
We're back now talking with Gail Lugo about what she does to keep herself healthy. Even though she has a very significant genetic risk factor, she has been able for the last 15 years to keep her condition stable and keep herself healthy. Gail, please tell us some more about the kinds of things that you do.
Mm-hmm. I watch the water I drink. The food I eat. I might not be a fanatic as you'll find a lot of people in alternative healing practices got involved because they needed to do that for their own well-being.
Right.
And many of these people have a path and they don't see beyond that. They see that path and they're looking forward and do not deviate from it. And I want to say I don't. I don't lead my life that way because it's not practical for me.
Mm-hmm.
I have a husband, and he always says he doesn't want to die healthy.
You have to have a little fun.
Exactly.
You know, some people say, well, I'm entitled to one or two vices, you know.
Exactly. You can have a vice, but instead of it being food in general, it can be a certain item one day during the week or something like that.
Yeah,
you know what
just
I mean?
Go easy.
Right.
Just don't pig out on ice cream or whatever it is. Just
exactly.
Limit it.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I do. That's how I live. I'll eat cheese once in a while. I don't eat it every day. I do eat fish and I eat meat. I would like to get away from red meat. Only because I feel better when I don't eat it.
So when I first met you, in 1994,
mm-hmm.
you were having surgery approximately every 18 months?
About every 2 years.
About every 2 years. And you
mm-hmm.
had been doing that for how long?
18 years, nine surgeries.
Nine surgeries in 18 years.
Right.
And you have some cousins who've passed away long since from?
Yes, I have two cousins that passed, my father, my brother, of course, my grandfather.
Right.
I credit my brother for saving my life.
How old was he when he died?
27.
27.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because of his illness that you went and got a diagnosis?
Yes. No. I went and got checked. I was diagnosed years before, but they didn't know all the body parts VHL affects.
Mm.
So I was having shoulder problems, and I decided to go get that checked. And that's when they found there were tumors in the cervical spinal cord as well as brain tumors. And then at that time, they knew to check a few body parts, so they checked the adrenals as well, and sure enough, they found one there.
Mm.
So what I thought was the important one was the brain, because I had been checked for that. Okay, my brother passed away. Within 6 weeks, I went and got checked, and it was determined that they think there were brain tumors. That was about 1984, and at that time, MRIs weren't even invented yet, CT scans they were using.
Mm-hmm.
And there were three doctors, and they said to me, we think you might have a brain tumor. Another doctor said, it could be the contrast. And another doctor said, well, maybe, and that's what I took. The maybe. Well, 3 years later, I went and decided I need to be checked further. I was having a lot of shoulder problems. And that's when they found the cervical spinal tumors. There were three of them, the brain tumors, the adrenal gland tumors. And at that time, they knew to check a little more. So, of course, I had the adrenal done first, and then the spine, then the brain, which was important to me. I thought it was just brain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that wound up being the least of all the surgeries.
Wow.
And that
so
was all in 1 year.
9 surgeries in 18 years, and now it's been another 14 years, and how many more surgeries have you had in that time?
None.
0 in the next 14 years. And so
correct.
What was the turning point for you, and what action did you take?
When I had my last brain surgery, I was getting out of my car one day, and I felt like weebles wobble, but they don't fall down.
Yeah.
So I felt like that, and I said to myself, the doctor did what he had to do. I had surgery in 1993 in November.
Mm-hmm.
I said, the doctor did what he had to do, and I feel worse. What now?
Mm-hmm.
Then it dawned on me that I had control, that I needed to do something for myself because I really felt like I was dying. And in that time, I started with the exercise. I had a lot of trouble getting my heart rate lower. It always stayed in the 80s and 90s. And I had a real tough time lowering it, and it was very difficult for me to get help from a physician. They don't have the time, the patience that someone needed in my situation. So I started with a stationary bike. I was probably doing about 1 minute, and I was regulating, I was observing my heart rate, my pulse, throughout that whole time. So at that point, I couldn't get it lowered. Today, I cannot get it raised.
It Wow.
stays in the 50s and 60s. And if I do cardiovascular work on a regular basis, it will stay in the 70s where I feel it should be.
Great. So mm-hmm. exercise is one element.
Right.
And nutrition.
Mm-hmm. My main principle on nutrition is I don't put something in my mouth I cannot pronounce, or that my body rejects. How it might reject it, I might be coughing after I eat it. Of course, if you break out, but I never broke out.
But there are more subtle messages from your body that it really doesn't like whatever it was you just ate.
Right.
As you say, if you start coughing or if you have a lot of phlegm or...
Correct.
If your tummy's upset, something like that, that's a message.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't eat that again.
Right. Why do you want to do that to yourself?
Right.
Is the food really worth it? It's not, in my opinion.
Right. So if you eat an entire bag of potato chips and the next day you feel dizzy, it might be because you're on salt overload, guy. You know, mm-hmm. like, why did you do that to yourself?
Or you might sleep extra hours. It's the fat and the potato chips.
Mm-hmm.
One time when I first started this, I was in the mood for fried chicken. So I said, okay, I'm just going to do it now. I slept a whole day.
Wow.
From the fat in the chicken, and I never touched it since.
Wow.
If I want fried chicken, I'll make it myself.
But because you can control what fats and in what amounts.
And what I put in it. I won't use breadcrumbs from the grocery store. I'll use it from the health food store.
Mm-hmm.
I won't use a vegetable oil since it irritates my back. I'll use olive oil.
That's really amazing. So I know you've studied a lot about nutrition and herbs.
Mm-hmm.
So can you share a little bit of that?
I got married 18 years ago. My husband is from Central America, and he introduced me to herbs. I always say that he accuses me of going overboard because I became educated in it instead. I just felt there was so much out there and so many opinions and conflicting stories that I needed to learn more about it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did. I went to school for natural healing. The focus was on herbs. And for many years, I determined, I looked at my test results. I always asked for all reports. I looked at my test results to see what was going on, see if anything grew, anything decreased in size.
And you're watching tumors, because
yes.
That's what VHL does. So you
yes.
have multiple tumors. How many tumors, by the way, do you have that you're watching?
About a dozen in the brain and half a dozen in the spine.
Okay, and these are tumors that you've been living with for many years.
Correct.
And the secret is to just keep them little.
Correct.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes people flip out if they hear that they have even one brain tumor, much less more than one brain tumor. And obviously you need to make sure that it's benign and not cancerous. But in VHL, the tumors are benign, though it's not real friendly to have a brain tumor. But if you can keep them small and not giving you symptoms, that's all to the good. So how do you keep them small? How do you keep these guys quiet?
What I do is cardiovascular work, and I won't do it every day because then I'm stable. I would actually need more exercise to increase my oxygen flow. So if I do it every other day, it tends to regulate my pulse better.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a pulse oximeter to measure that. So when I can determine if it's working for me, if I feel it's working for me, if I have other trouble. Right now I'm going through the stage which I've been doing this for years, and all my tests show that there's no problem. I can get up, or all of a sudden I'll have trouble breathing, or I pant. So I was talking to my doctor, and we determined that I'll try the pulse oximeter when it occurs and see what's going on. The pulse oximeter measures your oxygen intake as well as your pulse.
So this is just to give you some biofeedback, as it were, so that you know what effect you're having and when you're feeling dizzy, what your body is complaining about.
Correct. If I can measure it on that machine. Because they did all the tests and everything comes out fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they tell me my pulse rate, I had a problem because my pulse is too slow now. I can get it down to 40-something.
Hmm.
And they tell me, oh, you're in great shape. You have an athletic pulse. I said, but I'm not an athlete. And they don't think anything is wrong with that. And I do. I really do. And the way that I can regulate it is through exercise.
Right.
If something hurts, for example, if I look down and my head hurts, I don't look down.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot bend over because of the pressure in my head, but I squat.
Right.
After brain surgery, they tell you not to blow your nose. So if blowing my nose will injure me after surgery, why should I do that a year from now? Why should I blow my nose later? Mm. Won't that actually injure me in a way?
It's increasing the pressure in your head.
Right, so I don't do that.
And you already have some pressure issues in the head because you've got 12 little bumps inside that don't
mm-hmm.
belong there. Right. Yeah, it's very interesting. And I heard you say that you work with your doctor. So you haven't rejected Western medicine. You're working in partnership with them. How do you balance that, the natural medicine side of you and the Western medicine side of you?
In the beginning, it was very difficult. Now, I tell him what works for me. For example, I was experiencing hot flashes recently,
mm-hmm.
and I figured there was an imbalance somewhere in my body, and instead of determining where it was and trying to figure out where it was, I figured, let me try taking a multivitamin or something to that effect. So I'm doing it in powder. And in 1 month, the hot flashes were gone.
Great.
And as we always say, hormones are a major play with Von Hippolyndo.
Right, right. There are a lot of things that respond to these hormonal shifts that we naturally go through. And the tumors are one of them that we've noticed in VHL. Whenever we go through one of these hormone shift periods in our lives, like adolescence or having a baby or going on the pill or off the pill or menopause,
mm-hmm.
then there could be a growth spurt in the tumors as well.
And the body feels different during those times. And if you're in tune with yourself, you can determine when you don't feel right, when something is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you can determine what is going on and approach it that way, it's possible to keep everything under control.
So I'm hearing you say, too, that you need to slow down and listen to your body.
Oh, definitely.
Slow down and listen to your body. That's easier said than done sometimes. So we'll be back in a minute to talk more with Gail about how she accomplishes that. Right now, let's take a little break and we'll be right back.
This is Keith Richards, a.k.a. Just Saying. Is there cancer in your family? There is in mine. But it doesn't have to be bad. We can take action to protect ourselves. I've learned how to get screened and manage my health so that I'll live a long, healthy life. How about you? Visit www.powerfulpatient.org. Again, that's www.powerfulpatient.org. Peace.
So I'm hearing you say, too, that you need to slow down and listen to your body.
Oh, definitely.
So how do you calm yourself? What are your best methods for your own self to calm your spirit and be able to go inside yourself and listen?
My environment. First, your environment needs to be calm. There are trees outside my windows. I have large windows. I retired. The music I listen to is classical. I'll listen to meditation tapes. I feel my life is calm. I have no kids around.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of animals, and they give me peace.
Though you do have grandchildren sometimes that you enjoy, I know.
Right. I have 3 stepchildren, and 2 of them have children. So we see the grandkids once in a while.
But you
I
don't have
it.
Anybody around all the time.
No. My animals and my husband.
And that's a very full life. Yeah.
But I really feel if I didn't have anything, I'd be bothered by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all need a little stress in our lives, but we don't need the distress, as they say. You've got to keep it in proportion.
Mm-hmm.
And not have a mountain of stress on your life.
And sometimes I feel my legs jumping due to lack of activity. So I'll get on the treadmill or the bicycle,
mm-hmm.
and I feel so much better afterwards.
Uh-huh. So again, that's a message that you're listening to from your body. If your legs get jumpy, right, then you know you need to work out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And I had cervical spinal surgery in 1987. So that was, what, 21 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the left side extremities and different organs have atrophied over the time, because after my surgery, I was in a wheelchair for a while, and I had to go through the walking process once again. And a lot of the muscles are not as big as my right side. So recently, I started getting little spasms at my waist on the left side. And I determined, which I worked with my doctor to see if it was an accurate assumption, that the reason I'm getting spasms is because the muscles on the right side are a lot bigger and stronger than the left side, and things are starting to pull. It's been 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he agreed that's probably the case. So I also found out that I have more spasms when I sit down. So again, I'm listening to my body and determining when this is happening to me. Am I standing? Am I sitting? Am I exercising? Am I laying down, doing nothing? Well, I determined that a lot of it happens when I sit. So just out of curiosity, I decided to stretch out when I had the spasm. And sure enough, it stopped.
So you can always just try something and see if your body responds favorably or if it complains about that.
Exactly. So I'm trying to stretch from side to side daily to kind of counterbalance some of that so it doesn't get worse, because it will get worse.
Right.
Because if it just started and you don't do anything, it just gets worse.
It so sounds like you have a really good constructive relationship with your doctor.
Yes, he came a long way.
I was going to say to you, did he come that way? Did you find a wonderful doctor, or did you train one?
As he indicated once, we worked together.
Yes.
And he said that. I did not.
Nice. So, but he was open to working with you. And so I can imagine if he, you know, you go in and you complain about a spasm, a lot of doctors would have said, here's this prescription, take this medication.
Right. We talk about prescriptions because he knows I really don't like taking anything. And again, we talked about the spasms just recently because I see him probably about every 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I do get some head pain, and sometimes, as you may know, it gets pretty bad. A lot of that I found is stress too. But he asked me if I wanted a painkiller. And I was not happy with that because a lot of times I still feel the pain and you're dopey.
Mm-hmm.
So then some of the pain that I'm getting, I feel it's tension, muscle tension, including the spasms. So we talked, and he asked me if I wanted something for the pain, and I said, is it a muscle relaxer? He said, no. So he told me to try a new muscle relaxer that doesn't make you dopey as they used to. And he gave me a couple of samples, and it worked.
Great.
So he gave me a prescription, and when I went to the pharmacist, mind you, I have insurance, I went to the pharmacy, and it was $300.
Oh, with your insurance.
With my insurance.
After the insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely.
I said, I don't think so. So they called over there to find out what else he can give me. And I've tried it a few times, although I don't do drugs very often. And I tried it a few times, and it's the only drug I liked that worked for me.
So I'm hearing you say, don't close your mind to either modality. You can't close your mind to the natural because there is some good input there. And you can't close your mind to Western medicine because we also sometimes need that. But you got to find the right balance that works for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not an easy task.
No, it's not. It really isn't. And a lot of it I had to become educated in order to determine what I needed. I mean, who knows me better than me?
Right. And not everybody has to take a course in natural healing, but it certainly, if you don't take that course, you need to get the right guide with you. And there are many practitioners, and you have to kind of interview a practitioner, too, because not all the people who hang out a shingle are the right person for you.
That's correct. Definitely. Definitely. But I feel with our problem, with many illnesses, it happens in layers. So you need to approach it in layers, either the way you feel. One time I was working and I got bit by wasps in my face. I put my head out the window and I got bit in the face. And I went to the doctor at work. So I told him that, you know, you can tell my face was swollen. And I said, my stomach hurts. He goes, which is it? I said, you don't have room on your paper for both?
Yes.
You know, we tend to, in our society, we look at one problem. It could be multiple problems, and multiple things can fix those problems.
Yes.
So the items that you can fix them. Then you know exactly where your pain might be or really what's going on. Your leg can be bothering you, for example, but it could be coming from the spine.
Exactly.
You know, did you have surgery years ago? Could it be atrophied? There's so many things that can be wrong.
Yeah, and it could be in two different departments. I think our tendency in today's medical world is to say, you know, about your bee sting, is this a dermatology problem or is this a gastronomy problem? You
mm-hmm.
know, which specialist should I send you to? Well, you know, they could be connected here too.
Right.
Your body could be reacting to the toxin that the bee injected into you, and part of the way it's reacting is to get sick to your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of all connected.
Thank you.
My father used to teach gross anatomy, you know, the anatomy about the whole person. And he used to say, I wouldn't want to go to a hand surgeon, for example, who hadn't taken gross anatomy because it's all connected. And
yes.
we've talked to people, you and I, who were diagnosed as having carpal tunnel syndrome when, in fact, they had a tumor in their spine. It wasn't mm-hmm. in their hand at all.
Right. Right.
So you really have to work with your doctor to look beyond the obvious.
When I was about 18 years old, I was having shoulder problems.
Hmm.
So at that time, what did I do? I exercised harder.
Right.
And it was not improving. So
right.
I went to see a chiropractor. And it still was not improving. And one chiropractor would not recommend me to anyone. Although I told them my history, my family history. And I actually went to another chiropractor and told him the same thing. And his comment was, I'm not going to touch you. You need to go see a neurologist.
Good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but a pain in the shoulder could be a pain in the shoulder. You could have pulled a muscle, but you tried that and it didn't get better. It could also be a heart problem. Sometimes heart problems show up as pain in your shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who died of a massive heart attack. And when we went to help clean out his room, on his dresser were medication for muscle relaxant for a pulled shoulder. So, you know, misdiagnosed heart problem. It could also, as you experienced, be in your spinal cord.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of connections there that need to be explored. And especially if, you know, if you treat that as a pulled muscle and it gets better, then it was a pulled muscle.
Right.
But if you treat it as a pulled muscle and it doesn't get better, you need to look beyond.
But also look at the shoulder. Is it smaller? Is there something going on there? Is there a dent? Is there a hole? Is there bone? And when I looked at my shoulder, I found it was very bony, and I was exercising. And I paid special attention to my shoulders, and I didn't know what was going on.
Hmm. And you should have been developing more muscle, is that what you mean?
Yes. I wound up, I had shoulder subluxation,
hmm.
where your tendons are stretched out, so it doesn't get held into the socket properly.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to cervical spinal tumors.
That's what finally led them to think about the fact that it might be tumors in her cervical spine. Let's take a little break here, and we'll be right back to talk some more with Gail about how she manages her genetic risk factor. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Please go to powerfulpatient.org on the internet. You will find there the handout that goes with this show with information about the people we've interviewed, the websites we've mentioned, and other background on this information. And as always, we would appreciate your support. Please donate to the Cancer Research Fund and bring us back another day. Stay with us now, and we'll be right back.
You know, sometimes when people go to a chiropractor, they'll just immediately begin treating. Other times, the chiropractor will say, I think I need an MRI before I do. And people should know that the second is the responsible thing for that chiropractor to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there is some physical problem there, like a disc ripped or in your case, a tumor in the spinal cord, his treatment, the traditional chiropractic treatment, could in fact injure you more.
Exactly.
So he needs to know what's going on physically before he starts operating in there, or he could mess you up worse.
The first chiropractor that I was seeing was actually cracking my neck.
Oy.
Yeah.
That is a very bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bad thing for everybody, but it's even worse for somebody who might have a tumor in the spinal cord that could in fact be ruptured by that treatment.
And I had three of them.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
So there's a good example of why that chiropractor really ought to have taken a picture first so he knew what he was dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, thank you very much, Gail. I really appreciate you sharing all this. Any other impressions that you wanted to share with people about you, your listening to Raymond Francis's conversation?
Well, I did want to add something, and that's hearing a lot of different things, a lot of things that therapies that are very helpful, but you never hear about the elimination process, the body's elimination process, which is very important in reducing the toxins from the body.
Those bowel movements are
yes.
essential to our health.
And
they
and
help
a lot
us
of times
move the bad stuff out.
Yes. And when we're taking drugs, a lot of them are constipating. So all this just adds up in the body. And what's the body going to do with it but reabsorb it?
Right. And the longer you hold those toxins in, I mean, there's, what, 25 feet or 30 feet of bowel? And you just figure that it's all that toxic stuff is being held up in your body when you're constipated, and all those toxins are just seeping right back into your body.
Yes.
So move it out. And the best way that you know to move it out is?
Well, that depends upon what you're on, why you're constipated. Why
right.
are you constipated? Cheese is very constipating as well.
Right.
But why are you constipated?
Number one is water, right? You got to drink plenty of water.
Yeah, but sometimes that's not enough.
Right.
What I find works, too, is drinking about 12 ounces of water during the morning
mm-hmm.
before you even eat. Give your digestion a break and just give it water.
That also starts the peristaltic action, the normal muscle action that we don't even think about that generally
right.
moves things through our, you know, from your throat to your rear end. It gets moved by this, it's called peristaltic action. It's sort of like squeezing that hose
mm-hmm.
to move things through it. And I know when I was pregnant and they didn't want you to push for a bowel movement, they said the best thing to do is just sip water, just sip, swallow, sip, swallow, sip, swallow. And as you say, if you do that with 12 ounces, you're going to get that peristaltic action moving very nicely, and just sit there with a book or something and let it happen.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of times a drug that relieves pain or it's a muscle relaxer will also paralyze that process.
Hmm. So what do you do in that case?
Relax. We tend to hold a lot of stress in our rear ends.
Mm-hmm.
between relaxing. A lot of times if you squat for a while or you massage your abdominal area in a clockwise motion, that can also help.
So just rub your belly in circles clockwise.
Mm-hmm. Fruit versus heavy foods. Stuff that's easily assimilated. And it gives your system a break and starts to get back on track. But if you keep pumping it with drugs that are constipating, that might be a problem as well.
And this is not something you should withhold from your doctor. You really need to talk with the doctor about this.
Right.
Especially if it goes on for more than a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you can get yourself in trouble if you're too backed up.
I went for weeks without going after some of my surgeries.
And this is not a good scene.
No. I was miserable. There was one day I called Suicide Wednesday.
Oh, no.
Yeah, to this day I remember it. I survived the surgery, but yet I wanted to kill myself because of how I felt by not going to the bathroom.
Mm.
I was drinking soup, water, everything.
So, but the doctor can help you with something, and I mean everything from some of these special oils that can help. But if the medication is blocking you, you may need a medication to counteract it.
Right, but if you're on a softener or something to eliminate the body, you can become dependent on that as well.
Right.
So you want to make sure that doesn't happen. So at least sometimes maybe to get you started, that works. And then see what else you can do to keep it regular. Even if you have to take the medication, you can get regular. But you have to know what works for you and be
right.
In tune with your body.
It's just like maybe add a couple prunes or certainly fruits, fiber, and plenty of water.
Right.
Those are the three primary ingredients to staying regular.
Mm-hmm. Juicing is great for that.
Right. So if you take a mango or a pineapple or something like that and throw it through the juicer, that's a delicious way to help
mm-hmm.
your body.
Mm-hmm. I personally like a beet with two apples.
I tried that recipe of yours the other day, and it was, in fact, delicious. Thank
Wasn't
you.
That great?
Yeah, one beet and two apples in the juicer. It only took me 20 minutes altogether, and that included washing my juicer, and I really had a delicious vegetable for dinner. Thank you.
And if you recall, did it work?
Yes, it did, only you have to remember that beets will turn your pee red.
Yes, and sometimes you find red stuff in your stool, you're kind
Don't
of concerned
panic.
With it. That's true.
Well, thank you so much.
And the color is beautiful, isn't it?
It is beautiful.
See, there's a good part to everything.
That's
good point
right.
to everything.
Well, thanks. This is great. And you know, you're a wonderful example of someone who does have a genetic risk factor, a very significant one, and you have taken control. And you can't make this go away, but you can manage it, and you are managing it really very effectively. So I know you're not supposed to ask a lady how old you are, but can I ask you how old you are?
49,
and your brother died at 29.
27.
27.
So, my cousin died at 27, too, and another one at 22. 22 and 27, did I say that?
Right. Right. Yeah. And while everybody has a different path, you certainly have enough tumors that if they had kept growing at the pace that things were going 15 years ago, you would probably not be here anymore. And
correct.
So I really applaud you, Gail, and I really thank you for sharing that with everybody. You can shift the odds. You can't fix it altogether. You can't make it go away. You get to live with it, but you can live with it more constructively sometimes than we imagine we can.
And you don't have to be an extremist. You don't have to go from eating junk food to eating just fruit and vegetables because we tend not to stick to it. Just start out gradually. Do your, you know, the toothpaste and the shampoos and the detergents and the cleaning products, your home environment. Do it slowly. It's more doable.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You're terrific.
I hope that this conversation with Gail has been inspiring to you. Whatever your problem is, you can take some level of control over it. There are a lot of good guidelines in this book, Never Be Sick Again by Raymond Francis, even though, yes, he does go a bit overboard sometimes. Obviously, he's passionate about his methodology, and he has a right to be, and he's phrased it in very useful ways. But take from it what you can deal with, and whatever you do toward health is very much to the good. These are not on and off switches. It's not black and white. Everything we do is sliding, as he says, along the continuum from health to non-health. And the more you do to slide the little slider switch toward health is very much a good thing. Let me read you a little bit from page 323. He says, "You may wonder if you have the ability, the energy, and the resolve to make these kinds of life changes your own self. You do. But change is difficult, especially in the beginning. As I was reforming my life, I had to make a lot of adjustments. What I know for certain is that health problems are much harder to live with than these solutions." Unquote. So whatever your health problems are, they are harder to live with than making these changes and coming to the solutions to your health. "When I recognize," he says, "when I recognize that something I eat or something I do or something I expose myself to will make me sick, I simply don't want it anymore. It truly becomes that easy. You need to become a leader, however, because those around you may add pressure or distraction. If the people you live with or work with are eating unhealthful diets, you have to be the one to set a different example." Unquote. And of course, you also need to take responsibility for your own health. You don't need to necessarily reform everybody else in your house. So just as Gail said, her husband rejects a lot of the healthy stuff, and he wants his a little bit of junk food. And so she's made peace with that. She just doesn't eat it herself. Another question that people always bring up when you talk about eating healthy diets and eating organic food is the cost of it. And they'll say, "Oh, it's so much more expensive to buy all those organic fruits and vegetables." Well, if you stay away from all the packaged foods and all the things that have white flour in it, you'd be amazed what a dent that makes in your grocery cart, you know, and in the bill at the end. I mean, those are the expensive things. Instead of buying a big bag of brown rice, if you buy brown rice in sort of portion sizes in little boxes with spice packets in them, it's very expensive. So really rethink that. Take a look at what you really have in your grocery cart and what you really want to take out of that grocery cart, and then look at the price of the fruits and vegetables, and I think that you'll begin to see that it really is not all that expensive. I don't find that my total weekly bill has gone up. It really is just changed from buying the wrong things to buying more of the right things. So I don't pretend to be an expert. I'm a learner as well. But hopefully we can learn some of this together. And we'll talk some more about nutrition for sure. Next week, we're going to have a very interesting discussion with a Dr. Jean Wilson from California. And she works with fertility. She works with, alongside of some in vitro fertilization clinics, to help enhance the fertility of her clients and help them be able to have a baby of their own. So next week, we'll talk with Dr. Wilson, and I hope that you will join us. And meantime, this is Joyce Graff. Be well and be a powerful patient. Thank you.